Okay, so we're in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. We're going to make some good progress today. There's actually about three sections left. Now, the next section is verses 12b through verse 23, and then there's two other small sections that kind of all fit all together. But we're in chapter 9. Remember, chapter 8, 9, and 10, we're dealing with what our freedom looks like and how we process that, and the fact that sometimes because we have freedom, we can choose to give up our rights versus holding fast to them. I mean, can you imagine what would have happened if Jesus had held up to his rights and said, "No, wait a second, I don't need to go mess with those people down there in earth. Come on. I'm the second person of the Trinity. I've got rights. I'm not going to do that for them." And yet he chose to do that out of what? Love. How can we respond to people that have needs or concerns? Or can we be considerate? Can we be looking for ways of helping them? knowing that that we're doing this because they're a weaker brother or sister. So let's take a look at this. He's just finished up saying in the very first 12 verses the fact that as an apostle, he has the right to be compensated for his work. Remember, spiritual, when you give people spiritual nourishment, that in turn, you should be able to expect physical nourishment. In other words, you ought to get paid. So this is what we were talking about last couple of weeks, and we'll pick it up in verse 12. Second part of verse 12, he says, but we did not use this right, the right of being paid for their ministry. On the contrary, we put up with anything rather than hinder the gospel of Christ. We did not want to hinder the gospel of Christ. So don't you know that those who work in the temple get their food from the temple, and those who serve at the altar share in what is offered on the altar? In the same way, the Lord has commanded those who preach the gospel should receive their living from the gospel. But, in verse 15, I have not used any of these rights. I am not writing this in hope that you will do such things for me. I would rather die than have anyone deprive me of this boast. Yet when I preach the gospel, I cannot boast, for I am compelled to preach. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. If I preach voluntarily, I have a reward. If not voluntarily, I am simply discharging the trust committed to me. What then is my reward? Well, it's this, that in preaching the gospel, I may offer it free of charge and so not make use of my rights in preaching it. Though I am free and belong to no man, I make myself a slave to everyone, to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I become like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I become like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I have become like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so as to win those who have or not having the law. To the weak, I become weak, and to win the weak. And I have become all things to all men, so that all by all possible means I might save some. I do this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. Okay. Well, we've read it, so here's the issue. On one hand, we know, as an example in math, throughout the chapters 8 through 10, that the gospel gives us glorious freedom in Christ. But on the other hand, the very nature of the gospel makes us radically centered on others and sometimes causes us to restrict our freedom or the use of our so-called rights in relations to others. In other words, I'm not going to try to purposely cause someone to stumble. I need to be concerned about them. The key question for all Christian decision making is what brings glory to God And what esteems the gospel in a manner that seeks to win as many as possible to Christ? It isn't about our rights. If it's going to be about any kind of rights, it probably ought to be about the rights of God. Just thinking out loud. So the question is, can we do this, whatever we're trying to do? Is it going to bring glory to God? Is it going to help the gospel move forward? Is it going to advance the kingdom? And if not, then we really shouldn't probably be doing it. And there's silence. Okay, good.
No, that seems an appropriate yardstick anytime. I mean, when is that an inappropriate yardstick?
That's a good question. I don't know that I have an answer other than to say I don't think there is any other time.
Yeah.
And yet, so often, we forget. We all do, myself included. And I get riled up about, you know, well, that's my right. I have the right to do whatever this is. Mm-hmm. How dare they take away my rights? And the issue then is, you know, is it going to bring glory to God or not? And if I give it up or if I keep it? And will it help advance the kingdom?
I like the verse 22 where he says, when I am with those who are weak, I share their weakness, for I want to bring the weak to Christ. I try to find common ground with everyone, doing everything I can to save some. Like, it helps us guard against being aloof or judgmental as Christians, that you shouldn't be afraid to be with anybody if you can establish some relationship with them.
Well, of course, if we look at Jesus' example, we find that he was with people that were of ill repute, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, he didn't participate in their illness, but he did. He was there. It kind of reminds me of the Pharisees. Jesus comes. You know, the Pharisees are upset with him because he's eating with sinners. You know, and he goes, "Now wait a second. This is Val's loose interpretation. You had nothing but problems with John the Baptist, who was so strict in what he did and didn't do." And you said that he was crazy. Then you turn around and I'm the one who's partying with people. I eat with people that are of ill repute. I'm trying to reach them. And you're busy complaining about the fact that I'm cavorting with sinners. Which is it? Which one is right? What's going to make you happy? You know, it's like we're constantly looking for a reason to complain. And isn't that true with a lot of people that start complaining, and it doesn't matter what you do, they're going to complain about something. I've run into a few of those in my life. In fact, I hope I never run into another one, but I'm pretty sure I will.
To me, though, this attitude that Paul is sharing here, that's a kind of a lens to view everything he's writing about. I mean, you know, there's sections where he writes about, you know, do this, don't do that, do these other things, don't grow your hair, blah, blah, blah. It seems like he's kind of a peace builder. He's trying to reach out to all these different constituencies and bring them together and offer something from everyone so that they can act as a community. That's the kind of way I see it.
Yeah, you know, it's it kind of reminds me of what happened in the 60s and 70s with I don't know if you guys know Chuck Smith. Chuck Smith was the pastor of Calvary Chapel in Costa Mesa, California. Mm-hmm. And out of there came a huge movement. But there's a movie coming out sometime later this month called The Jesus Revolution. I don't know if you've seen.
Yeah, I saw some trailers for it. Kelsey That's Grammer, about, of all people, is
He kind of looks a little bit. I mean, if you squint your eye and turn your head just right, he kind of looks a little like Chuck Smith. But, you know. You gotta look just the right way and say, oh yeah, I see the similarity.
So that movie's kind of biographical about this guy, huh?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Okay. And he his church was basically dying, and there were suit and tie people, and he eventually invited hippie type people, young people, to come into the church. And it just frustrated some of the leaders of his church because, well, they didn't look like us. They didn't dress like us. They didn't do things like us. You know, how dare they come into our church? Sound familiar?
It sure does.
Yeah.
Even look at Kensington from when it first started to what it became at its height. And I remember when it first started, they showed some videos. I mean, you know, Dave and Steve Andrews, I mean, they're wearing suits still. And
Yeah.
You know, they did go through that period of time, though, when they were doing a lot more, like, outreach through secular arts, both music and drama and videos and stuff. And they've kind of gotten away from that over the last 5 years or something like that.
Yeah, that was purposeful. I mean, I didn't necessarily agree with the change, but I mean, it was very purposeful. I think it was, well, I got the impression that Dave was driving that bus, but.
Dave and Cody. And Dave, because of.
And Cody, right. Yeah, sure.
Cody was the instigator of that.
Yep.
Yeah. It's. The issue is, how do you reach the community, and how do you best reach the community? So,
The message that I really, you know, thought was resonated with me back, it wasn't really speaking to me, but when we, you know, we took that part of the gospel that, you know, about going after reaching that one sheep.
Yeah. There's a definite positive reason for doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, as with all movements, there are going to be changes. And sometimes they're handled well, and other times they leave something to be desired in the way that they're done. I don't disagree with the change that they made. I disagree with how it was implemented.
Right.
It just needed more time to develop. Anytime you want to bring a change to we all know this, right? If you've had any kind of leadership training, you know that there's a bell curve, and you've got to cast vision. And vision just doesn't announce and then it happens. Vision is a long process. And by the time the leadership is absolutely tired of talking about the vision, and if they have to talk about it one more time, they think they'll vomit. You're just starting to make headway with the people in the pews or the seats. It just takes a long time to cast a vision and to train and teach them about why you're doing what you're doing. And there's always, you know, there's always good examples and bad examples of how it's done. So just pray for them. You know, they're still trying to figure it out. And by the way, one of the big reasons you saw a drop off in the arts was Callie and
Mark.
When they stepped away from the arts, they didn't bring in anybody that had that same kind of passion.
Yeah, bingo. I kind of noticed that too.
In all fairness, those three guys were very unique. They fit together incredibly well from what we can tell. And I wasn't there for the early days, so I can't speak to if there were issues or not, but I know that what happened was there was great synergy, it appeared, between them, because the church just, and to me, I'm sure they don't think it exploded, but from an outsider looking in, it seemed like it exploded.
Yes.
So at the time I was an outsider. So anyhow,
the kids grew up.
I'm sorry?
Their kids grew up.
Yeah, that's part of it. And in all fairness, that happens with many ministries with leadership in the pastorate, that the emphasis is always on wherever your kids are. It's just natural. We all do that. Because that's what we're concerned about, is our kids. And it's hard to make sure that you continue to carry through that concern about all of the various age groups. And I'm not sure I would have done any better than they would. It's easy to quarterback on Monday morning than it is, you know, in the middle of the game sometimes. So, all right, let's continue to go.
That movie, an unpaid political announcement, but that movie is showing next week, Tuesday, at the Imagine Theater on Rochester.
Oh, okay, cool.
Okay, so I think it's an evening showing, but there's a couple groups that are kind of getting tickets together and checking it out. It might be an interesting drop-in.
Cool.
What was the name of it, Roger?
It's the Imagine Theater.
No, the movie. The
movie's called
Jesus Revolution.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I saw the trailer for it. It looked very interesting. I saw the trailer for it when we went to the show last week.
Yeah, that's the epicenter of the Jesus movement in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Maranatha music came.
My era.
Yeah.
It's our era.
Yeah.
That's where the very first major contemporary Christian artist, label came out of that movement, mm-hmm. and it was called Maranatha Music.
Maranatha, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyhow, let's continue, shall we?
Yes.
All right. So we're in.
Yes, George says.
George says so. Let's do it.
I've been through that thing with Godspell and stuff. So it's that's the old thing.
Yeah.
Godspell.
Yeah. Jesus Christ Superstar.
Along with the Who and the Beatles and Pink Floyd and all this.
Grateful
Dead. It says that movie's going to be at the MJR in Troy Wednesday, or I guess tomorrow at 7:00.
Yeah. Okay.
Only one day, though. I guess it's not in their regular listings. Apparently, it's a one-day showing here.
Probably kind of like The Chosen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Could be my guess.
And Chuck Smith is a good teacher, though.
Yes, he is. He's
a great teacher.
Very good teacher. And out of it, grew a movement called Calvary Chapel Church Movement.
Right.
Which is still going on today. All right, so... So Paul defends his right to refuse support, which is kind of interesting. Normally people are busy saying, well, I need the support. And, in this particular instance, he was defending his right to not receive it. He talks about his priorities and the things that were important to him and to his life. And it's unfortunate that sometimes we have our personal priorities confused, and the result is that we end up hindering the work of Christ because we put our priorities ahead of his. I mentioned last week about the church that Giuseppe and I know, I don't think the rest of us were at that church when I took the group. But this church at one time was a fairly decent powerhouse church for an evangelical movement in Sicily, and now is just a fraction of itself for a variety of reasons. But the church, the pastor that founded the church practiced this issue that Paul had, and he refused to take any payment, which made it really tough for the next guy coming in. He couldn't get paid either. And he's a day laborer, laying tile. That's how he makes a living, so that he can pastor a church, which really makes it tough to be able to pastor it effectively when you're busy working, all the time to try to put food on the table. All right, so when Paul talks about priorities, and he talks about the fact that sometimes we confuse our priorities, I can't help but think about Matthew 6:33, which talks about where do you put your treasure? Where are you putting your retirement, when you're adding to your retirement fund? And there have been many, many people that have said, there's plenty of money to do missions. There's plenty of manpower for service. There's plenty of money to do whatever the church needs done. The problem is that it's in our pockets still. God's got plenty of money. It's still in our pockets, and if we would just be willing to, listen to God, and then just do whatever He says. I've told you the story, I'm sure, a couple of times at least, about Louis Ferry Schaefer, who was the president of Dallas Theological, and he and and C.S. Schofield, who created the Schofield Bible, if any of you know the Schofield Study Bible. They were sitting and talking and praying. They have a prayer meeting at this at the seminary, asking God for funds that they needed to keep the school open. It was just in the early days of the school. And one of them was praying, Lord, you own the cattle on a thousand hills. If you could just sell a few, it'd really help. You know, which is kind of funny. There's a knock on the door and the secretary is bothering them. And, you know, Lewis Schaefer, Dr. Schaefer says, you know, I ask for not to be disturbed. She says, doctor, I think you want to meet this gentleman. It's really important you meet him. Would you step out or invite him in? So I invited in this guy. He's kind of dusty, got his big old Stenson hat on. So I just want you to know I'm a believer. I believe in what you're doing. And he says, I just delivered a herd of cattle to the stockyards, and I'm here to give you this check that I've signed over to you for the amount of money that the cattle brought me.
Yeah. You think,
every time I think of that story, it just cracks me up. God, you own the cattle on a thousand hills. Could you sell a few so that we could? And then God does exactly that. I mean, the irony just cracks me up.
You don't and ask, you don't get.
That's true. It's true. So he does this. He doesn't take, Paul doesn't take a salary, if you will, doesn't take money from the people he's ministering to, because he's afraid it will hinder the gospel of Christ. That's pretty wild when you think about it. And then he goes on to say, now listen, I'm not hinting that I want you to give me any money. How often have you known guys that have done, or ministries that have done that? You know, they say, well, don't send us any money, but we're really in need of it.
Yeah.
You know, and so they're kind of hoping. I think it'd be a whole lot easier if you just said, look, here are our needs. We know God's going to provide. But in the midst of providing, would you mind just asking God if he wants you to do anything? And then just be obedient. I'm amazed how often God takes care of us that way and takes care of the needs of the ministries. So what's Paul's reward? What's he get out of all this? I mean, come on, after all, it's not that big of a deal. He's just, well, yeah, it is a big deal. What's his reward? It's the joy of preaching the gospel. Mm-hmm. And doing it without charge. Kind of reminds me when I traveled overseas, you know, I never expect anybody to give me any money over there. Every once in a while, they'll give us some of the places give us a few dollars, especially in Italy, they'll give us a few dollars for petrol. But we never asked for it. You know, we just pay out of the pocket, you know, out of what God's provided for us. For the ministry, but we're over there just trying to minister to people and take care of them. So he says, you know, woe to me if I don't preach the gospel. He wants him to have good stewardship. And, you know, in 1 Corinthians 4:2, it says it's required of stewards that a man be found faithful. In other words, don't abuse your privilege. It really becomes an issue. There are times when I've had people say, well, you've got funds in the, you know, in AFM, go ahead and do this or do that. And I go, I'm not sure that I really should. You know, it's there for a particular purpose. It's there for when we have a need that we can meet a person's need or specifically a ministry's need. Specifically, that's what we're doing here. And so I don't always feel comfortable about, I want to be very good about being a steward of God's money. You know, it's why at church, in churches, when I pastor a church, I don't want to know what anybody's giving. Because if I know, I might treat them differently. And I don't want to do that. I try to treat everybody the same. Makes it harder when I do know. But in the case of AFM, it's kind of hard for me not to know. So anyhow. I'm reminded of the story one of the guys that I was heroes of my faith and from years and years ago, Dr. Harry Ironside was he actually had two honorary doctorates. He had actually done his undergraduate at Wheaton and later received a doctorate from Wheaton and then later a doctorate from Bob Jones University back in the 40s. And at one point in time, he became the pastor of the Moody Church in Chicago. And I've heard pastors or people on the platform use this same idea that he's the one that actually that we have first recording of someone doing this. It was announcement time, and he during the time for the offering, he says, "We ask God's people to give generously. If you're not a believer in Jesus Christ, we do not ask for you to give. We have a gift for you, eternal life through Jesus Christ." But we've heard that many times. Mm-hmm. You know, this offering is for members and for regular attenders. You know, we're not going to discourage you if you're not a regular attender to give. We'd be happy to have you put that $1 million check in the offering. But we're not asking for you to do it. And then I've also heard many places have said, you know, but God has a special gift that he'd like to give you. He talks about the gospel. So what a great way of doing that, huh?
Well, that's Kensington always. Memory is they always say that. Heritage says that.
I think it's important.
Not the thing about having a gift for you, but the whole thing about, you know, if you're not regular attendee or, you know, we're not expecting you to give anything. And it's a little, you know, with giving, there's no longer anything being passed around anymore in the church. I mean, they're giving baskets at the exit and entrance to the church or something. And most people,
they're passing the bag at Kensington now.
Oh, they are.
Yeah. They went back to that. I don't know. Daryl, you probably know how long ago was that?
That
was 6 months ago or something.
At least, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We pass a bag at renewal, although the vast majority of the checks come in through the mail. We have people that do, you know, online banking, and they send the checks. And we do offer a program called Titherly, which allows them to give through our website as well. But the vast majority of our checks come in through the banks. So. But you know, we still passed the bag. So anyhow, here's a question. When Paul says, I want to become all things to all men, is he being disingenuous? Is he being a chameleon?
No, he's trying to build common ground with any human he comes in contact with.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know, because I happen to agree with you, Gary, but I'm asking the question because there are people that they read a passage like this and they go, well, now wait a second. Is he changing his message? You know, he's not changing his message. He's not a compromiser. He's not adjusting his message to please his audience. He's an ambassador. He's not a politician, which is kind of important.
Well, he does change some of his details. So, you know, like the whole thing he talks about here about, meat offered in the pagan temples. It's like, sometimes it's okay. Sometimes it's not. Depends on who he's with. If it's, it's going to bother you and separate you from God, then he won't do it. But if it's, if it's a bridge builder, then he'll do it. He obviously doesn't think it's important between him and God, but it's important between him and other people.
Edwin, you were going to say something.
I was just going to say, I don't think that thought, I mean, the only reason you would have maybe that thought is if you took it out of context.
Okay.
I mean, the context of what he's talking is fairly straightforward, I think. And mm-hmm. I think when he throws things like, you know, we're going to eat meat from the altar and stuff like that, I think it's simply because there's another point of reference for somebody. You know, we often talk about a seed and sowing and farming and stuff, and then we talk about fishing, and we you know, four or five different ways.
We make it relatable. Yeah. Saying we make it relatable to the people that we're dealing with. George, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I think but also in 10, he talks about not when you do the Lord's Supper, not being the same thing with the taking thing to demons either. So he kind of changes, but he tries to make a big distinct difference.
Sure. Between the two. Yeah. We're not going to, we haven't gotten there yet, have we? But you're right. That's where we're headed. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, where was the preaching when in the Hall of the Gods, I think it was the Decapolis, that he brought up a nameless God? Can't remember where.
Oh, that was Paul. He was
Mars Hill
in Athens. And he talks about the God who was, the unknown God. And he talks about it basically saying, hey, I'm here to introduce you to him.
I mean, that was so. Just woof.
Yep. Drop looking right for in. Ways of building bridges, not walls. Bridges,
yes, indeed. Yep.
And that's a, you know, I've told you that. Dan, are you wanting to talk? Go for it.
No, go ahead. That's right. Go.
I was just going to say, I think I've told you the story about the guy I was on the airplane with, and we kept getting rerouted because we were trying to get from Florida back to Detroit. And we ended up on the same plane. He ended up taking me home, and I've continued to have contact with him on and off over the years, being able to pour into his life. But so far, I'm not sure if he's ever come to Christ. But one of the things he did was he told me he was a Catholic. So I started talking about the similarities versus the differences in what we believe. And at one point, he asked me, he had gotten a rosary from his mom or some grandmother or something other, and he wanted it blessed. And so he's going to take it to a priest, but he said, would you mind blessing it? I said, sure, I'd be happy to. So I took the rosary, and I asked the Lord that every time that he used it, that he would remember that Jesus died for his sins.
I don't know, Val. You don't have that priestly authority. I don't know if you can do that. So,
I just turned my collar backwards. So, you know.
Hey, you remember that young guy? Is it Russ that has the mission in Africa?
Yeah.
That it was quite a while ago when he was here speaking live to us, and I asked him. I said, "Well, how do you first approach these people who have no knowledge of like Judaism or the Christian God?" And he said he starts with their current belief system, like they're animistic. So they worship mountains, they worship trees, they worship rocks. And he says, you know what, all these gods, well, I'm here talking about the God that's all over them.
Yep.
So he doesn't like deny their belief system. He builds on it.
Yep.
Yep.
Not something we would do. I mean, we wouldn't talk about the God of the rocks and stuff. But
well, I think you have
that was a bridge
you
built.
Find a common ground.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
I mean, I can remember I was talking to a Buddhist several years and years ago. But one of the things we did is I tried to find common. I went out and bought a book on Buddhism so I could read a little bit of it, so I could figure out where did we have common understanding of things, and how could I use that as a jump off point from that to Christianity. He ended up coming to the Lord and brought his kids to church as well years ago. But, think about this. The Lord kind of did the same thing when he was here on earth for his 3.5 years. What did he talk about with Nicodemus, who was basically a highborn, top of the shelf religious leader? He talks about spiritual birth, right?
Yep.
Yep.
What's he do with the Samaritan woman?
Shows her the way, gives her the water.
Yeah, he talks about water, the very thing that she's there for. He finds something, would you mind giving me a drink? Well, sure, I can't believe you'd ask me. He finds a way of bridging the gap and then creating a building there. Go ahead, Evan.
I was going to say, I think he goes in and destroys the cultural norm that way.
Hmm?
Well, I can't believe that you would associate. Well, I don't care about that stuff. What I care about is you. And he just kind of, he said, there's no penalty for doing this way. this is, you know, I just, that's what I, that's the thing I get from Crisis is it's for everybody.
Yeah.
And so should you be, you know,
good. I want to close with this so that we're true to our time frame here. This is a quote I found. I thought it was kind of interesting. He says, to immature people, Paul's lifestyle probably looked inconsistent. In reality, he was very consistent, for his overriding purpose was to win people to Jesus Christ. Consistency can become a very legalistic thing. A man can become so bound by man-made rules and standards that he has no freedom to minister. He would be like a young David trying to battle Goliath in Saul's armor. Think about this short guy. You know, Saul stands head and shoulders over everyone else, and he puts his armor on David. It had to look comical. You know, and yet, you know, David couldn't move, and he wasn't trained to know how to do it. So the issue is, you know, don't get bound up by man-made rules and standards so that you lose your ability to minister. All right. I'm ending the recording.